Okay, everybody, and I thought for a few moments we would be putting together Torah tidbits downstairs, but they tell me that we moved up here. Anyway, I'm not going to give you Pshatim on the Haggadah. I did that on Sunday, so if you're interested, you can get a hold of that particular chair. But I'm going to talk about some halachic aspects of the Seder that might be a little interesting. Some of them are well known, but perhaps I can give you a little more detail in some of them. Plus, a very interesting halachic shaila for Ashkenazim that arises when the last day of Pesach is Friday, and you're going from Friday into Shabbos. So we'll talk about that a little bit too. So hopefully there are three or four discrete categories that I want to talk about. The first, let's go back to going in the order of the Haggadah. We have Kadesh, right? We make Kiddush. Orchatz, we wash our hands. Now, why do we wash our hands? So the truth of the matter is, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and really the Mishnah Berurah says even today it should be done, generally speaking, whenever you ate a vegetable that was dipped in liquid, or fruit for that matter, that was washed or dipped in liquid that was still wet, there actually was a chiyuv of netila shadayim, just like for bread, and you had to make a bracha for it. In fact, the Shita Sagra is, even Bizman Hazeh, you make a bracha. The Mishnah Berurah says, today we do not make a bracha, but the Mishnah Berurah actually does advocate that if you're eating it with your hands as opposed to a fork, you should. Many people are makil, but the Nitziv explains that since the Seder is supposed to be a replication of eating the Korban Pesach Bizman HaMikdash, then essentially, since we're about to eat a vegetable in salt water, even if we normally do not, Mishnah Berurah says we should, but even if we normally do not follow the halacha of netilas shadayim for a vegetable or a fruit that is dipped in a liquid, Pesach night we do, because we are trying to simulate the achilas korban Pesach. Now, we don't do it totally, as you know. Number one, at least Ashkenazim do not have roasted meat at the Seder, so people shouldn't think it's the Karban Pesach. And number two, when we have the symbols of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, Rabbi Gamliel, so when we point to the Matzah, we point to the Maror, we do not point to the Zeroa, to the shank bone, because we don't want people to think we're eating a Karban Pesach outside of the Beis HaMikdash, although there's an interesting whole halachic shaila, could we bring a Korban Pesach today, but generally speaking, we paskin not, and in any event, the meat in your home is not a Korban Pesach. So, on one hand, our imitation is not complete, and we have to distance ourselves to some degree, but on the other hand, it is the Seuda of the Korban Pesach. That's why, for example, the Afikomen, which is a symbol and a remembrance of the Korban Pesach, we don't eat anything after the Afikomen, just as you weren't allowed to eat anything after the Korban Pesach. So the Nitziv says, for that same reason, the idea of Tibulo B'mashke, although it is not a halacha that's unique to Pesach at all, theoretically it could apply the whole year, and the Mishnah Berurah says it should apply the whole year, but we are extra zahir to do it Leil Seder, because Bizman HaMikdash, it was an absolute obligation, so we do it as well. Okay. So that's the precursor to karpas. Karpas is the dipping of the vegetable in the salt water.
Is it just a diet, you mean this way, or?
You do it like you do for bread.
Oh, you do?
You do it exactly, except without a bracha. In the time of the mikdash, you would actually make a bracha.
I thought it was tumah.
Huh?
I thought the reason was tumah.
Well, whatever the reason is, it is tumah, but that's the reason for netil shadayim for bread as well. Whatever the reason is, all I'm telling you is that the laws of fruits and vegetables dipped in liquid are the same netil shadayim as eating bread. It is the same reason and the same idea. The laws of tumah, to give you the background of tumah would be a little too complicated, but it's not the ruach ra of getting up in the morning. It is not that.
Okay.
It is the halachos of how food and liquid become tame through the tumah of the hands, and that is taken off by the netilah shadayim of bread, not the netilah shadayim of the morning. Ruach ra, evil spirit, which is a mystical Kabbalistic idea, is not what is being referred to here. What is being referred to here is the regular laws of tumah, which themselves are labyrinthine and complicated. But it's the same netilas shadayim as for bread. Now, the karpas is of course referred to in the Mishnah as tibul rishon, that before the meal, even before the Haggadah, we dip something in a liquid. Now, it's interesting though that the reason the Mishnah and the Gemara give for it are not really the all the beautiful reasons we hear later. The idea of a tibul rishon, number one, was an unusual activity to stimulate the curiosity of children. So it's a very funny ceremony. So a child is going to ask you, why are you doing this? And your answer is, oh, that's exactly why I did it. So you would ask why. In other words, there's no intrinsic answer.
When the child is parted from the
former
child. That's right. Now the other idea is, though, Right. You ask your putter from the Manishtan if you come up with the right question, or even a question. Now, the thing is, the other aspect, though, is that the extra appetizer, so to speak, the extra appetizer was a sign of freedom, of dignity. It was not, in other words, the karpas was not supposed to be a commemoration of slavery. That's the maror and everything else. The karpas was a celebration of freedom, of extra luxury, and the child is asking, why are you so luxurious tonight? So it didn't have to be in salt water. It could be in vinegar is mentioned, but it could be anything. If you didn't have kidneys, it could have been in mustard. You know, in other words, a sauce, any type of gravy, that would be perfectly fine. Now the salt water later, only much later, much later, different remuzim, that the word karpas, which actually the word karpas is not even used in the Gemara, but karpas, which is a green vegetable, is connected to Samach Perech 60, which means 60 myriads, 600,000 male slaves. Perech had backbreaking labor, or Perach. Perach means soft mouth, meaning they were enticed initially with a gentleness, and then it turned into vicious slavery. So those are beautiful remuzim, but they are remuzim that are superimposed on a ceremony that had a very different purpose. The purpose of the karpas was either to stimulate curiosity and to be a celebration of freedom and luxury. It was not supposed to be tears and crying and the like. Nevertheless, the Gemara does indicate that the karpas does have to be something that's borei pri ha'adama, that you make ha'adama on, and we'll get to the reason for that as well. Well, cucumber is not parsley, but you can be yotze karpas with any vegetable.
But
yeah.
A lot of people use potato.
Yeah, well, the reason they use potato, potato is fine also, but the reason they use potato is because in Poland, that's what you got this time of year. So Ashkenazim would come from Russia and Poland. There were not a lot of green vegetables around. Another mile of potato is you don't have a problem with bugs or whatever it is, although the potatoes maybe, who knows what it'll come up with, maybe we'll find something in potatoes. But Meikar Hadin, although again, some people want green because of Aviv, spring, but Meikar Hadin, anything that you make a Borei Pri Hadama on will be good. Now, how much karpas do you eat? Now, this is a very, very interesting discussion, only a little bit. And here is the thing. People are hungry, people might be getting hungry, and there's a long magid going on, although I'll talk a little bit about that as well. So people would like, maybe I can eat a lot of potato or something at that particular point. So the bad news is that most poskim, the Rambam actually says, karpas, you eat a kazayas like everything else. Matzah kazayas, moror kazayas, karpas kazayas, and if you want to eat a chazanish's kazayas or want to eat more, so according to the Rambam, at least, there is really no problem. Eat as much karpas as you want, as long as, of course, you don't ruin your appetite for the matzah that you must eat. But we do not paskin like the Rambam. We paskin bedafka, unlike every other eating of the Seder, it has to specifically be less than a kazayas. And the reason is a very, very interesting reason. This is really based on the Maharil. Now again, many Rishonim say you don't have to have a kazayas. See, again, there is a machlokas, do you have to have a kazayas, that's the Rambam, or you don't have to have a kazayas. But even the people that say you don't have to have a kazayas, they wouldn't automatically say you're not allowed to have a kazayas. But the Maharil is the one that originated the idea that you're not allowed to have a kazayas. And this is the prevailing minhag. Let me explain why this is so. We're going to be eating a vegetable later on in the Seder, and that, of course, is the moror. And the moror, which has to be a kazayas, the moror is also a thing on which you make a berei pri adama. And yet all of us know that we don't make a berei pri adama on the moror. And this is already in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us that a berei pri adama is not made on the moror. But there's a machlokes among the Rishonim why that is so. The Gemara does not clearly indicate why doesn't Maror get a Berei Pri Adama. One shita is, well, Maror doesn't get Berei Pri Adama because you're eating it after the matzah, and the same way Hamotzi exempts meat and fish and eggs and everything except for dessert, Maror is not dessert. Maror is considered to be part of the meal. And therefore, Maror doesn't have a Berei Pri Adama because of the Hamotzi covers it. That's one view. But Tosfos brings another view that says, wait a second here. Maror is not part of the normal meal here. You're not eating the Maror as a course. You're eating the Maror as a mitzvah. It is separate from the basic meal. And therefore, it would not be covered by Hamotzi. But the thing that covers it is the Borei Pri Hadama that you made on the Karpas. So, the question is the following. In other words, we start off with a common supposition that Moror does not need a Borei Pri Hadama. That's the given. That's the given. But there are two questions, there are two reasons why that might be so. Is that so because it is covered by Hamotzi? Or is that so because it is covered by Borei Pri Hadama of Karpas? Now, reasons the Maharil the following way. In order to be sure that your Moror is covered, you have to have Kavana when you make Borei Pri Hadama of the Karpas to cover the Moror, right? Because otherwise, you'd have a suffix whether you have to make a bracha on the Moror, whether it's covered by Hamotzi or not. But the thing is, once you eat a kazayas of food before you wash, before Hamotzi, yeah, you would be chayev in a bracha achrona of Berei Nefashos. Now, if you would make a Berei Nefashos, then your Hadama could no longer cover your Maror, and then you'd have a Savek. Am I chayev? Now, because of this, the Maril says, you have to be able, so to speak, to ensure that your Borei Pri Hadama will cover your Maror, and the only way to ensure that is to eat so little that you're not chayav in a bracha acharona. Now, the truth of the matter is the following. The halacha is a bit more convoluted than this, because let's, in fact, this is an interesting Hilchos Brachos question for the whole year. Let's talk about every Shabbos, it happens a lot. Let's say a person, you come home, you make Kiddush, and you eat some things before the meal, before you wash. You might eat mizonos, you might eat fruit, you might eat fish, you might eat something before you wash. So here's the question. The question becomes, do you have to make a bracha acharona, generally, on food that you eat after Kiddush, but before you made Hamotzi? Or will those foods be covered by benching? Right, nothing to do with Pesach. It's a general question. Food that I eat before Netilat Yadayim, can that be covered by the benching, or does it require its own bracha achrona?
But wouldn't you have a problem saying kiddush that covers the makom seuda, that the kiddush would not cover the meal if you made a bracha achrona after?
Well, that's an interesting question, but that wouldn't be a problem because you're still b'makom seuda, meaning to say I made kiddush and this is where I'm having my seuda. You know, and besides, the stuff I ate might qualify as a seuda too if it was mizonos. So, as a general rule, so we start off with the following general rule. As a general rule, which will have a huge exception in a moment. As a general rule, stuff you eat before Hamotzi does require a bracha achrona, whether it's fruit, whether it's vegetables, whether it's a glass of water. The only thing that doesn't is the wine of Kiddush itself. Actually, so water, liquids would not, because liquids would be covered by the bracha on the Kiddush. But everything else does. But here's the big exception. And this is a machlokas, but this is what the Mishnah Berurah paskens. If what you are eating before the meal will cover a food that you're going to eat during the meal that would need its own bracha, so the pre-hamotzi food is connected to the meal because it is covering something. Now, the classic example is fruit. It's a very good example. Generally speaking, when you eat fruit as a dessert, you must make a borei pre-ha'etz. Okay. So let's say I'm eating fruit before I wash. And I make a borei...
Like, huh? Not just borei pre-ha'etz, but melons.
A dessert. Well, yeah, dessert. In other words, dessert. Okay, I don't want to get into that. Hold on, that's complicated. But desserts need their own bracha, okay? Usually cake does not. Fruit needs it. Vegetables need it. Whether ice cream needs it is a big machlokas, whether ice cream is treated as a liquid which doesn't need its own bracha or treated as a solid. Most American poskim say ice cream or sherbet does not need its own bracha at the end of a meal.
It's a main course.
For some reason, right. Yeah, I hear you. And a lot of poskim in Eretz Yisrael seem to say you do make a bracha. I don't want to get into those exact halachas, but here is the point I'm making. If you're eating before the meal something that you're planning on eating at the end of the meal, which would require its own bracha, and is going to be exempted by virtue of the bracha you made before, that is enough of a connector between the pre-hamotzi food and the post-hamotzi food, so that you don't have to make a bracha achrona, and therefore it covers it. Now, theoretically, that would mean the following. Theoretically, that would mean, if you knew for sure that your hadama bracha has to cover your maror, you knew for sure hamotzi's not doing it, then theoretically, you would be able to eat a whole kezias, because you wouldn't need a bracha achrona, because you're covering it. But the problem the Mariel has is, we're not sure if you need the Adama Bracha to cover it, because maybe the Hamotzi covers it. In other words, everything is a subject. So on the tzad that the Hamotzi covers the Maror, then you're not using the Adama of Karpas for anything, so then it would need a Bracha. Which means, Bekitzer, you actually have two different doubts here. Doubt number one is, if I eat a kezias of karpas, do I have to make a bracha achrona? If it covers the maror, I don't. But if it doesn't cover the maror, I do. So you're not allowed, the Maril says, to put yourself in a situation. Now, bottom line is, suffek brachas lakula. Whenever you're in doubt whether you have to make a bracha, except for benching, which is daraisa, you don't. So if I ate a kezias of karpas, I would not make a bracha achrona. But the big problem is, I'm not allowed to put myself in a situation where I might be chayav a bracha, and I'm not allowed to do it. So because of the Maharil, again, just I'm sure many people know, but just for those who may not know, Maharil is Rav Yaakov Molin. He is actually considered to be one of the great, great sources of Ashkenazic minhagim. He was the Ramah, for example. Maharil was in the 1300s, and the Ramah in the 1500s bases much of his psukim on the Maharil. He was considered to be the Gadol Hador, and Maharil is the authority on all of these minhagim. And the Maharil was mechadesh many types of usually chumras. He was mechadesh different chumras to be choshesh, to balance all of the different shitas. So the Maharil is the source which has come down to us. By the way, the Maharil also has a lot of interesting things about Nigunim and Yomim Noraim. He made a whole big point that a chazan must use traditional nuschos, and it's usher to be Mishana. He considered them to be very, very sacred and the like. Yeah.
Did he write any books?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure how much. We have chuvos of Maril. We have chuvos from him. And we have the Sefer Maril, which is a list of Anagim. But I believe the Sefer Maril was compiled by his Talmidim. But the chuvos Maril are his actual chuvos. And if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, look in the Ramah, you will see constantly in the parenthetical references, although those parenthetical references are not from the Ramah, but sometimes they're not accurate, but the parentheses in the Ramah is constantly Maril. Yeah.
How come there's not a problem? I know that if you finish eating, you have a certain time to make the bracha achrona.
Right.
So it's going to be an hour or 2 hours later that you're going to get to that more.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of the issue. I mean, part of the issue, part of why some Rishonim say it is the Hamotzi that covers the Moror and not the Borei Pri HaAdama is because they say too much time has elapsed from the Borei Pri HaAdama to the Moror. It wouldn't be possible for that bracha to cover it. There is Hesach Hadas and the like, and that's why they say the Hamotzi. But you see what this is a complicated construct, because this is a double problem. Meaning, if I eat a kezias, there are two different sfeikos that I'm going to get hit with. Two different halachic doubts. One halachic doubt is, do I have to make a bracha acharona on the karpas? A second halachic doubt is, if I do, I might have to make a Borei Pri HaAdama on the Maror. But that's also a suffix, meaning, because maybe the Hamotzi covered it. So, let me just give you the bottom line. The bottom line is, if you messed up, well, if I was the Rambam, I can't call it messed up. If you ate a kazayas, the Mishnah Berurah's ultimate psak is, everything is a suffix bracha. You do not make a brain of fashas on the karpas, and you do exactly, everything is the same, and you do not make a brain pri adam on the mora. But in both cases, you did something improper because you created a situation where you might be obligated in a bracha that you're not allowed to make. And even though the halacha is that in cases of doubt, you don't make these brachas, but you're not supposed to put yourself in the doubt. So it's a very, very interesting question. According to the Rambam, you eat a kezias. The Nitziv says, according to the Rambam, you would actually make a bracha achrona. The Rambam does not say that. It's not clear. Perhaps the Rambam holds that you eat a kezias, but you can still cover the maror because it's not part of the meal, right? So the Rambam does not say. So you cannot conclude that the Rambam would say you make a bracha achrona, but then that's how the Nitziv understands the Rambam. Now, the Bach has a whole different approach. The Bach has a nice approach. The Bach says, hey, you know, so why don't you just eliminate all your doubts this way? You have all these doubts, right? So, eat a kezias of karpas. Have kavana not to cover the mora. And when you make the hamotzi, have kavana not to cover the mora. So at that point, everything's good. You make a Borei Pri HaAdama on the karpas, eat as much as you want, and make Borei Pri HaAdama on the mora. Plus, in other words, what is so gefelich? What issur would there be to make a Borei Pri HaAdama on the Mora if you have kavana that neither the karpas covers it nor the hamotzi covers it? Oh. So the Bach actually says, go ahead, make two Borei Pri HaAdamas.
And the bracha achrona on the karpas.
That's correct. Make a Borei Pri HaAdama. Eat as much karpas as you want. Make a bracha achrona. Have kavana that you didn't want to cover. You did not want to cover the mora. And when you make the hamotzi, have kavana you don't want to cover the mora. And then make a Borei Pri HaAdama. Again, people would criticize the Bach because you're not supposed to cause unnecessary brachas. I mean, normally when you have a meal, we don't tell you, have kavana that hamotzi shouldn't cover the roast beef, so you'll be, technically if you had such a kavana, you'd have to make a bracha on the roast beef, but we would not tell you to cause an unnecessary bracha. It's not a bracha levatal, right? There are two concepts. A bracha levatal is a blessing in vain. That's if I stam make a shahakol and I'm not drinking. Bracha sheina tzricha is not as severe. That's when you're chayav to make a bracha, but you didn't have to create the situation. So that's also not a proper thing to do, but it's not the same aveira.
I thought you couldn't make a bracha on mar because it's bitter.
So this depends on what you're eating, really. This may depend. You are correct. And you're raising an interesting complication. If you're eating horseradish.
Yeah,
if you are eating horseradish, you're correct. The Bach Seitza may be problematical because there is a question whether you make a Berei Pri Adama on something that's essentially not really edible. that is a good question. Particularly if you follow the opinion of the Nisivos, who says, by the way, you're not allowed to use ground horseradish. You have to eat pieces of horseradish. And some people say, well, that's a question of pikuach nefesh, to take a piece of horseradish and chew into it. But if you're using romaine lettuce and the like, even though there's a little tinge of bitter taste, you certainly make a Berei Pri Adama. Many people have the lettuce and salads, you know, so... So it would have its own
bracha there. Itzu, you know?
Say again, then.
You have to make that itzu.
Yeah.
You put it in the lettuce.
Yeah.
And when you get to the middle where it is.
You mean you do mix and match? Yeah.
Yeah. No, but if you don't mix and match, you just.
I'm saying, but you know, a lot of people just use the lettuce. Right? They just use the lettuce. And somebody asked Rav Yashiv, is there a heater? Because you know, the Mishnah itself gives you a list of which vegetables are for maror, and of course, a lot of the names we're not 100% sure. But the first on the list is the type of romaine lettuce, according to most interpretations. Horseradish might be three on the list. And that's counterintuitive, you might think, because, hey, isn't the more bitter the better? But yeah. In reality, Rav Yashiv says, there is no hidur in increasing levels of bitterness. First of all, there's even a question, is that I'm not an expert on taste so much, but there are many people that say horseradish is not a fundamentally bitter taste. Whatever it is, it's fiery. The taste of a hot pepper, which horseradish is related to that, a jalapeno is not bitter. It is not astringent, or there's some other term for it. It isn't even bitter. It's just a burning sensation. And the myla of lettuce, which is also not so clear, besides putting aside the bug problem, is that the Gemara describes the ideal maror as replicating the Egyptian slavery, which was dechilaso rach v'sofo kashe. It started off soft, and it became hard. Or the Yerushalmi has a slightly different lashon: "Techilaso matuk, v'sofo mar." Now, again, the Nitziv says, are these the same thing or different things? The Yerushalmi says it started off sweet and turned bitter. So too with lettuce, the way it should work, our modern processing messes everything up, is that initially it gets bitter the more you chew it. So chilasay matuk and sofamar, and that's not true for horseradish. So in that sense, horseradish may fail the test of chilasay matuk, unless maybe the way you do it with mixing and matching. So you're starting off with lettuce, then you hit the horseradish, and maybe you make it that way. Now,
has a grades.
Yeah.
Which one comes to priority?
Yeah.
Which one comes to the horseradish is the last one.
Yeah.
The first one
is the lettuce. Is the lettuce? That's correct. That's 100% correct. And I'm just mentioning that's because it corresponds to techilaso matuk v'sofamar, or some say it refers to the way it grows, that initially it's soft and then it hardens, right? It's a machlok. In other words, is it rach v'kasheh or matuk and mar? And is that the same thing? Is that a different thing? That, again, is a machlok. But be it as it may, lettuce is number one. Aaron Cutler actually maintained that even iceberg lettuce would somehow qualify. But again, you have to be careful with
I thought Ramosha said iceberg lettuce.
Did Ramosha? I heard it from Shem Rebrand. I didn't recall Ramosha, but okay.
The one is
okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to think?
But are these with the available foods that you know recommend? Are they? Is it
those customs or the preferences, think about historically what foods were available in Jewish areas, or so is that, maybe could that be why lettuce is preferred to horseradish, or?
Well, no. As I say, the reason that's given is that the halachic criterion of the desirability of maror is this rule, techiloso rach v'sofo kasha. In other words, it starts off sweet or hard or soft, and then it becomes harder. So.
But you said, for example, with the potatoes. Right?
No. That's karpas is very different. No, let me explain this. Karpas is different than maror. Karpas, the Mishnah doesn't give you a list. The Mishnah just says take a vegetable. So that you're 100% correct. Karpas was certainly a function of local conditions and this and that. But maror, by contrast, the Mishnah gives you a list of the five species of maror, and the Gemara indicates that this is a priority list. Now, why so many, at least Ashkenazic, Polish, Russian Jews used horseradish, even though that's not, once again, that does go back to the lack of availability of lettuce in those societies during the time. In fact, people say we have to be so grateful that the Gaonim didn't ask for potato. Potatoes logically should be kidneyous in many ways because you grind it into flour and the like. But potatoes are Native American, and they were unknown to the Gaonim, so the Gaonim didn't ask for potatoes. But imagine, talk about the catastrophic potato famine in Ireland in the 1830s. Big, big tragedy. Imagine if Jews couldn't eat potatoes during Pesach, we'd be in very big trouble. Of course, one might ask Akasha, why is corn kidneys? I mean, if you're going with the idea that kidneys is only what the Gaonim were aware of, and they specifically ushered, and it's not an expanding category, then logically it should not include corn, which is also Native American, and it should not include peanuts. And indeed, Rav Moshe does say Befedrish, that he remembers as a child. He says, not only peanut oil, I remember, but Rav Moshe remembers actual peanuts. He says in Russia, peanuts was a Pesach treat they would buy the children. But now we have the Badats, I don't know, it's not just Badats, but we have Hashgachos and Eretz Yisrael that say quinoa is kidneyous. We just expand our categories. So again, I don't want to get into this. This is an interesting conceptual question, whether kidneyos, which is really a very strong minhag, which here becomes a halacha because of the minhag, hanaga of the Gaonim, is that a defined category or is that an expanding category? And there seems to be some inconsistencies because corn is, I think, universally, at least corn oil is another type, but at least corn universally by Ashkenazim is treated as kidneyos. Peanuts, Rav Moshe said, was actually mutter. Quinoa is a big machlokas. Most hashgachas in the United States do allow quinoa for Pesach. I believe most hashgachas here in Eretz Yisrael only allow it. In other words, you don't have to get an Oakley kidneyos hashgacha. I mean, you can get a regular hashgacha.
The OU, I heard them speak about it 10 years ago.
Yes,
and they said all along the quinoa was okay. The problem was it was such small quantities that it was in these factories where they could have gotten mingled until they had a producer doing just quinoa. They couldn't give
So those are okay, that's obviously a different problem. That's not a kidney.
Yeah, they said initially it was okay. The problem was only the production matter.
Right. So Mayinyan Leinyan, let me get to it's going to be my last topic, but I'm going to mention it now since we talked about kidneys.
With the potatoes, why that would have been a problem if Jews hadn't been allowed to eat?
No, because there are two, kidneys is it was a practice that began with the Gaonim, and there are really two different reasons why do they forbid beans and rice. Reason number one is that since these were products that were commonly ground into flour and were used in the baking of bread or rolls, so therefore they made a harchaka, don't eat this stuff because you might come to use flour and other things. So based on that, Rebbe Kivega writes, there was a makom in theory that potatoes, which is also ground up into flour, they have potato rolls and potato buns and things like that, perhaps should be treated like corn flour or the like. Now, there is another reason, which wouldn't apply to potatoes, another reason for the kidney yosar chaka is that it was common, I'm not sure if it's still common, in some places they say it's still common, that these legumes were planted in proximity to grain fields.
So the wind could have blown.
And the winds blew kernels in.
Right.
Now that problem is probably less, would not cover potatoes per se, but the first issue, you know, might. So now let me mention this interesting issue. First of all, there are perennial problems. Many of you have Sephardic, well, some of you are Sephardic, I apologize, but you know, for Sephardim there's no problem, but if you're Ashkenazim and you have Sephardic relatives, maybe a son-in-law, one of my students is actually going, you know, married a Sephardi young woman, and he's going to his in-laws for Pesach, right? So that'd be very interesting. So the question becomes, obviously an Ashkenazi cannot eat kidneys, that's for sure. But on the other hand, what about non-kidneys food that is prepared in the same pots, right? So the Sephardic family cooked rice, cooked beans, whatever it would be, and for the Ashkenazi guests, they're only going to cook, you know, Ashkenazi food. But the Ashkenazi food was made in the same vessels which took the kidneys. Now, do I look at kidneys as for an Ashkenazi, the same as treif? So the same way I can't eat food in a chametz pot and I can't eat food in a treif pot, I can't eat food that was cooked in a rice pot? Or does kidneys not go so far? It's an interesting shaila, but let me just tell you an important psak of the Mishnah Berurah generally about kidneys, which may be the answer to this particular question. The Mishnah Berurah paskens that although chametz that is mixed in, chametz, let's say real chametz that is mixed in before Pesach, it's nullified in 60. So if a little bit of chametz got mixed into more than 60 times, I could eat that even on Pesach. But if it got mixed in on Pesach, even if it's a million parts to one, chametz is absolutely usur b'mashu. This is a unique chumrah of chametz that there is no din of bitil b'shishim. That is why if you cook a non-chametz in a chametz tikkapot, you know, the stuff is going to be treif, because even whatever little residue of taste got into the soup, even if there's 60 times the soup, no good. But the Mishnah Berurah says that's only true for chametz. Kidneys, for Ashkenazim, kidneys, even though kidneys is prohibited, not only is kidneys batel in 60, kidneys is batel in a simple majority. Very unusual. Prohibitions are never batel, usually, in a simple majority. That would mean the following. That would mean if I'm cooking, let's say I'm cooking quinoa. I'm cooking quinoa. And let's assume quinoa is not kidneys. But there is a kernel of rice that falls into the quinoa. Or even if there's a lot of rice that falls into the quinoa. But as long as there's more quinoa than rice. Now again, I don't mean if I can recognize the rice, I got to separate it. But if I can't recognize it, but I know that some rice fell in and it all looks the same, although quinoa and rice don't really look the same, but let's assume it would look the same. Kidneys is batel berov. Not shishim. Rov. A little bit more. So consequently, here is the idea. When a pot is treif, what does it mean a pot is treif? It absorbed some taste from the thing that you cooked, and that taste goes back into the food. But whatever kidneys taste goes into the non-kidneys food, even if I don't say I have 60 times that taste, I certainly have more non-kidneys than kidneys. So in a case like that, where you have more non-kidneys than kidneys, then under those circumstances, it's going to be nullified in a majority. Now, it is true that you cannot deliberately mix. You know, you can never take. I'm not allowed to take, let's say, kidneys and deliberately mix it. But the Sephardic person who cooked that food was not deliberately mixing it. They were cooking food for their family. They were not deliberately mixing the food for the purpose of nullification. So as a result, you should ask again. I don't want to give you a definitive psak because this is Nogea Lamaisa. But there is a very, very good makom in halacha that will permit an Ashkenazi to eat non-kitnios food that was cooked in a kitnios pot based on the majority principle. Again, this is not a heter of kitnios. I'm not muttering the kitnios, but the food that is cooked in the kitnios pot. But again, you should talk to her, because there are counter-arguments for this as well. In fact, I would differentiate, actually, between non-kitnios that was specifically cooked for the Ashkenazi versus non-kitnios that was cooked for the whole family. If it was specifically cooked for the Ashkenazi, you may indeed run into a problem that this was deliberately done for nullification. Masha'en Kane, if it was cooked for the Sephardi family as well, then it wasn't done for nullification, it was done to make food. And then the Ashkenazi could benefit. I said, so one has to be ma'ayin. So one should not, so if you have, do not request a special food to be cooked for you. You should eat the non-kitnios that was cooked for the family as a whole. Yeah?
Two questions. Just with you talk about making the food for a specific person.
Yep.
Yeah, let's say my mom, right, friend, he's a vegetarian. So she makes a dish for him, the vegetarian. But she makes much more than just he would eat.
No.
It's because he's there, but she makes it for everybody. Because he's there,
I think you'd be okay. I think you would be okay there. I just mentioned you make a small measure just for him. Now, let me just mention the interesting shaila that we have now. And this is a shaila. Okay, this shaila comes in two varieties. There's a chutz laaretz variation of this shaila for gebrux. This year as well, and there's an Eretz Yisrael shaila for kidneys. And that is the following. Shabbos this year, the second Shabbos, is Isru Chag. It's the day after Pesach, right? It's not Pesach anymore. Theoretically, you could eat chametz on Shabbos. Now, it's going to be hard to get chametz on Shabbos, because who's going to give it to you? I mean, the Rav is not allowed to buy it back from the guy on Shabbos, because you're not supposed to, right? You're not supposed to make kinyanim, do business transactions on Shabbos. Theoretically, if your geisha neighbor gives you, you know, something that you know is kosher, theoretically you could have it. Okay, but most of us are not going to have chametz. you can even ask him. But there is a question of making a kinyan, right? Okay, but the question is this. The question is, kitnios, even Ashkenazim who don't eat, are allowed to own kitnios, right? We're allowed to own kitnios. I don't have to sell it. So theoretically, if I have kitnios, let's say it's a rice cake, and I know it's only rice, it's nothing else, no wheat, on Shabbos, I could take those rice cakes and eat it. So the question is the following. Am I allowed to cook on Friday, on the last day of Pesach? Can I cook kidneys? Can I cook string beans? Can I cook rice? Can I cook corn? What is the shiloh? Here's the shiloh like this. We know that normally you're only allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Yom Tov, right? That's our rule. You cannot cook on Yom Tov for even another day of Yom Tov. You cannot cook for Chol HaMoed. You cannot cook for Shabbos. However, Chazal realized that not being able to cook for Shabbos would be a great hardship. So they created a mechanism that permits you to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, and this mechanism is called Eruv Tavshilin. Eruv Tavshilin, right? So this is now for the first day of Yom Tov. You don't need an Eruv Tavshilin because the first day is Shabbos. But for the end of Yom Tov, right? So the last day of Pesach is Friday, and Shabbos is the day after Pesach. So I want to be able to cook on, for Chol HaMoed is not a problem, but I want to be able to cook on Friday for Shabbos. So in order to cook on Friday for Shabbos, I got to make an Erev Tavshilin on Thursday.
You have to light an extra candle.
Well, an Erev Tavshilin is
you
not...
You don't know to strike a match.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true also. But I'm referring to cooking. But if I want to cook on, you're correct. You are correct. But if I want to cook on Friday for Shabbos, so on Thursday I make an Erev Tavshilin. Now, what does that simply mean? That simply means I take some food that I set aside Erev Yom Tov, saying that this is for Shabbos, And the concept is, by beginning that effort, I'm allowed to finish it on Friday. The minog is, it's one cooked item and one baked item, and even during a regular Shabbos and Yom Tov, it would be a matzah and a hard-boiled egg or a piece of fish. Well, Pesach, of course, that's the natural choice. The truth is, the matzah is what people use. Anyway, so that would mean that the Erev Tavshilin, it's important that you set this aside on Thursday, a matzah and a hard-boiled egg or a piece of gefilte fish or, you know, any fish or meat that you want. And that will permit you to cook on Friday for Shabbos. Now, this itself has complicated halachas. What if you forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin? Bidieved. Well, in Chutz La'aretz, you could make an Erev Tavshilin on a two-day Yom Tov, on the first day of Yom Tov, because maybe it's Chol in Eretz Yisrael, you are stuck. So in Eretz Yisrael, we expect you to be more conscientious. And if you didn't make an Erev Tavshilin, you're in trouble. On the other hand, there is a rule that the Rav of the city, or the Rav of the community, or the Rav of the Basic Knesset, makes an Erev Tavshilin for everybody. But there's another rule that only works once. you get one chance to use that. It's like those quiz shows, the lifelines, right? You get one chance to use it, and you cannot do it habitually.
So why in the Nusach of the Bracha do you say we're making this for the whole city?
Right. So again, that basically means for this one time. In other words, it's understood. Anyone that needs it, but only for this one time. Meaning, you can make it for other people, but only for once. They can't, because otherwise you'd have habitual offenders. Otherwise, I'll never make an Erev Tavshilin because somebody's doing it for me. And of course, the net result of that is maybe nobody's going to make an Erev Tavshilin. Everybody thinks the other person does. All right, so what's the question with kidneys? Here's the question. The Gemara discusses, if on a Torah basis it is prohibited to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, then how could this Erev Tavshilin matter? And how could this matter a Torah violation? So the Gemara gives two answers. And which answer you have is going to have a very interesting implication. Answer one is that there is no Torah violation here. Because in theory, when you're cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos, if an extra guest were to show up at the door, or let's say a group of people would show up, potentially it may turn into a Yom Tov cooking. So the chance that it might be a Yom Tov meal is enough to take off the Yisur D'Oraisa, and it's only a rabbinic prohibition. If you don't have guests, you know we're coming, so for that the Erev helps. But the Hetzer is that what you're cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos is potentially Yom Tov food, and that would be a justification. That's one answer. The second answer is that Minatorah, Shabbos and Yom Tov are one long holiness, and therefore there is no prohibition. It's not the same as Yom Tov for the week. Now, the Mishnah Berurah brings down, again, from much earlier poskim, that there's a practical difference in those two reasons. And that is, are you allowed to rely on an Erev Tavshilin when it's so late in the day that the food could not possibly be consumed on Yom Tov? Meaning, it's going to be cooked on Yom Tov, but there's not enough time to eat it. If the hetzer of Erev Tavshilin is the first reason, you would not be allowed.
What's the first reason?
The first reason is that guests might show up and eat the food. If it's the second reason, that Yom Tov and Shabbos are considered to be one holiness, it would be permitted. The Mishnah Berurah brings lahalacha, since we are uncertain, a lot of uncertainties tonight, since we are uncertain which is the dominant reason, one should do their cooking early enough on Friday so that there is at least the chance that guests might show, even if you know they're not, but at least there's a chance they might show up. Now,
so you couldn't make rice.
So this is our question. So now here is our question. So now I want to cook rice on Friday. So, and I'm going to rely on the Erev Tavshilin. So if the idea is I'm allowed to prepare for Shabbos, I'm fine. But if the idea is the potential of my guests, perhaps I'm in trouble. So Lamaisa, the Chassam Sofer says that guests don't have to be Ashkenazi guests. You can have Sephardi guests too, right? So that would be okay. Now, let me point out that the Chassam Sofer was actually not addressing Kittis. He was addressing a different Shaila. The Chassam Sofer was addressing Gebruch, Sheruya. Mm-hmm. But it's the identical Shaila. And the problem of Sheruya is, the Hasidim, again, the Makar of that is also very, very fascinating. The Makar is the Bala Tanya, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, who points out that for various reasons they don't allow their matzah or matzah meal to come in contact with liquids, whether it's water, whether it's soup. And as a result, they cannot have matzah balls on Pesach. They're very, very deprived. And the like, this is Sharia. Now again, Pesach cooking in hotels and the like has just invented tremendous things. It almost like you're eating like real bread. One has to wonder whether there should be Isurim of Marisayan. Yeah. Yes. So that's what I wanted to say. So among many Hasidim in Chutz Loretz, the halacha is, or the minog is, that although Shiruya is prohibited, they will eat it on the eighth day of Pesach. So the tshuva of the Chassam Sofer was, if the eighth day of Pesach is Shabbos, like this year, let's say in Chutz Loretz, are you allowed to make Shiruya through an Erev Tavshilin? And of course, the same issue would be here, this would be in Eretz Yisrael as well. Now here, so here, the Chassam Sofer matches it because he says maybe your guests don't hold of Shruya, right? So it's the same thing. In other words, the same way we would say by Kithias, maybe your guest will be Sephardi, so maybe your guest will be someone who doesn't hold of Shruya. But at least you see that this would be the Cheshvan. In other words, the analytical problem is, are you allowed to cook in reliance on an Erev Tavshilin those foods that you are not allowed to eat on this particular day, but which will be permitted to own, and which will be permitted to be consumed the next day, and this would depend in turn on the two rationales.
How can you use the same dishes?
Huh?
How can you use the same dishes?
That would be a problem. Yeah, you'd have to cook it in special kalim. That is correct. Because the hetzer I told you, for an Ashkenazi to eat non-kitnios food in a Sephardi home, would not apply to the Ashkenazi who makes his dishes treif with kidneys for him. You are correct. It's a good horror. You'd have to have separate kalim. Yeah.
First, two things. What's
shvuya? Yeah. Sheruya. That's what you call gebruch. That simply means soaked matzah. And that's simply a chumrah of the starting from the Bala Tanya that you don't allow matzah, even baked matzah, because as far as the Gemara is